What's up with them cookies? Who's eating cookies?
I was.
Omar, dude,
that's
Omar,
classic cookie wrapper.
Yes. Omar, you have an ear for cookies. That's so rad that you knew that. Now, can you determine the kind of cookie I was eating by the sound? Ready? I'm like... No.
It sounds like the tray that's inside those Keebler, like fudge cookies. You know what I'm talking about?
You're close. It is the tray that holds chocolate peanut butter fudge cookies. But not Keebler. They are a store brand that is accidentally vegan.
You know what? I know which one. Yeah, the ones that here are the Safeway ones. The Safeway ones are accidentally
vegan. Yes. Omar, you caught it.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Indestructible Art, a weekly podcast about video games and comic books. My name is Evan Campbell. I'm here with Ryan Adams.
Hello, friends, fans, loved ones.
You're the worst. And Omar DeArmas.
What's up?
Hey, what's up, dudes? Usually, we come to the show every week to talk about comic books and video games. And we have a couple of principles. And one of those principles is we don't want to bum out our audience. Mm-hmm. But today, I think we're here for a special reason. We've all kind of gathered together, and you know, there's some things before we start today that we need to take care of. Obviously, we've all heard the news of Mr. Iwata's passing, but today we're not going to mourn a death. We're going to celebrate a life. Before we start, Ryan, you particularly, I know, have gone through a rough breakup with Nintendo, and I have to ask you, today, if only for today, can you put aside your differences?
Well, here's the thing is, everyone knows how I feel about Nintendo, how much I love the company, and maybe that's why I've been so harsh the last couple of months towards it. So yes, I mean, today I'm not talking about, you know, things I dislike about Nintendo, nothing like that. I'm going to talk about a man who I think changed video games and revolutionized games, and a guy who was a developer's developer. You know what I'm saying? This is a guy who I think not only loved video games, but understood video games. And I think this guy is responsible for a lot of the great things that are happening now in games. So any kind of ill feelings I have towards Nintendo right now are completely pushed to the wayside, because we're talking about a man's life here and a man who did so many great things for many, many years for video games.
Who has a PK fire burning so brightly in his heart that it reached the rest of us. A King Boo, if you will. A real just stand-up, like, fun dude. And so it'd be a bummer if we're just like, oh, man, we're so sad. So we're just here to talk about all the rad stuff that I want to do. It did. And you know, talk about it in a way, I guess, maybe that a lot of other people haven't yet, I hope.
Right. I will start with this, is that I'm a little bit older than you guys. I think we've established that on the show. And so it's weird to think that some of my earliest video game memories... and this is before Iwata was, you know, president of Nintendo. A lot of the earliest video game memories I have are games that he worked on before I even knew who Iwata was. Balloon Fight, for example, is a game I remember playing when I was a small child, like a kid playing that game, Balloon Fight.
Yeah, I had Balloon Fight. I had Kirby. I had all those games on my Game Boy that I played, you know, way before being at all conscious of what a single person was doing at a game company.
Yeah, much like Miyamoto, Iwata started off, you know, programming games, right? Like actually making games, and kind of worked his way up, I guess. You know, I'm not super familiar with the way Japanese game developers are structured, but I imagine that's a pretty hard thing to do. And you probably just have to be really, really dedicated to your craft and stick around with it for a while and fill, you know, an important role. Like I think on Giant Bomb, they're saying how like Iwata may have like fixed the American version of Final Fantasy, like recoded the whole thing. And, you know, that's not the first time I'd heard of him doing stuff like that. But, yeah, I also worked on Earthbound.
Well, here's the thing is, I don't want to speak too much about this, but think about this. Nintendo has had only four presidents in its, you know, 100-plus career being around. And three of the former presidents before Iwata were all relatives. Iwata was the first guy that wasn't part of the bloodline
to take
over by running the company. And here's a guy it's not like he was some business insider or some CEO that jumped around from business to business, because you get that a lot in the business world, is where you'll have the CEO of, say, a film company is now the CEO of some hedge fund company in Wall Street. And you're like, those two industries have nothing to do together. But the idea that, well, no, I'm a CEO, and a CEO is kind of interchangeable. Here's a guy that went from being a developer and programmer to not only understanding how that works, but to be able to run a company the size of Nintendo. That's a rarity. You don't go from being the rad technical programmer guy to just being the president slash CEO of a major company. That just doesn't happen. So the fact that he was able to do this, and he was handpicked to run Nintendo, which is insane, and not part of a family line, which is crazy. I mean, that just goes to show kind of how big of a badass Iwata was.
I mean, it all comes back to, like, if you guys, we'll put a link in there. There's 2005, I think, GDC keynote that he did. It was one of the first things. I think he became president of Nintendo in like 2002 or something, 2003. But one of the first like major things that he was doing is his keynote at GDC, and he talks about in the very first opening line is like, on his business, I think the quote is, "On my business card, I am president. In my head, I am programmer, but in my heart, I am a gamer." And like that was the dude, you know, like that's how he ran that company from till the very end. You know, that's super awesome. He was always doing things that he thought would better video games for the people playing them, not for some business thing.
And you gotta imagine when he took over running Nintendo operations, he was coming off of the GameCube being out, and he was in charge and tasked with running this company that, and listen, as much as we love the GameCube here on the show, it was not seen as a...
In some ways, I think it's not even a critical success as much. Like, it's not a market success.
At all. And he was tasked with bringing Nintendo to the 21st century. And so here is a guy who developed the DS and the Wii, which became huge, huge, and really doubled Nintendo's market price. I mean, he's a guy that really went in there, and he just thought outside the box. Whether you like the Wii, the DS, the 3DS, the Wii U, or not, here's a guy who is always thinking, look, this is what competition is doing, and that already exists. We want to create new experiences and really increase the number of people who can play video games by thinking outside the box and doing things that games couldn't do before. And that was Iwata's thinking. And I think Iwata had to do a lot with the culture that he changed at Nintendo. And he was able to implement a lot of policies, whether you liked him or not, whether you liked the Wii or the Wii U. But here's a guy who just wanted to do something different that we haven't done before. And, I mean, you can't get mad about someone wanting to push an industry into different directions for new experiences. And I think we're seeing that with, like, Morpheus and Oculus, is that the industry we could easily sit there and just use our the same controllers and the same ways of playing games, but in order for it to really survive and thrive, it needs to always advance. And I think that's one of the great things about Iwata, is that he pushed for that. At Nintendo, especially Nintendo being a company deeply rooted in tradition.
Sure.
He was able to really push it out, do cool new things. So
at great risk too, right?
Absolutely.
At great risk. You know, nobody used to say that the Wii was going to be as successful as it was. I mean, it seemed like a great idea on paper, and eventually, you know, its history is what it is. But and the same thing with the DS. I think about the DS, and I think kind of about the 3DS still as a thing that hasn't really been replicated in any kind of way, shape, or form. Like, that thing is very, very unique and super awesome. And its sales show, as well as some of the rad games that are made on both of those consoles or have been made on those handhelds. It's crazy, and sometimes you got to take those risks, and usually a guy, like a business guy, is never going to take a risk, right? He's just going to make the next iteration of the same thing that they made before, because there's an average estimated cost associated with that. You know, how much you're going to spend, you roughly know based on the previous sales how much you're going to get back. In some cases you end up with something like the Wii U, but you know, the Wii U is still really an interesting thing. Like, it just because it's not selling well doesn't mean that it's not a rad piece of hardware in its own way.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm glad that it exists. You know, like I love my Wii U. I think it's amazing. And it's only because of like innovative thinking like that, like trying to break outside the box and trying to create something that is not necessarily in direct competition with people in the same industry as you, I suppose.
I mean, there's all those quotes too. Like when the Wii was being developed, you can go back and read now, like in Iwata asked if they did some like retrospectives and stuff, and all the whole team that was involved in creating the Wii, they knew that they weren't making something that was going to be a graphical powerhouse in comparison to the things that were out currently, like the 360 and stuff like that. Like they knew that stuff. They also did that with the DS, as they were up against the PSP, and people think, oh man, here comes another thing from Nintendo that is not going to be able to handle what Sony's doing by pushing power in a way that they were thinking to advance the handheld market. They were doing innovative things, and that, like, you can follow that throughput all the way through to the Wii U. You know, like the Wii started as something different, and they knew they were taking risks purposely to do something different, and that goes all the way through to the Wii U. It's cool to have someone who believes in their thing that much, you know, believes in their reasons to push it through that far, even in the face of bad press and low sales of a certain thing or not. They're sticking to their guns, and that's admirable.
Yeah, definitely impressive. Like, a super impressive legacy. I mean, included in that, like, he used to work at HAL Labs, like that internal studio that was responsible for Smash Brothers and I think Pokemon as well. The first two.
But
right?
He also saved HAL too. You know, at one point, HAL I think was on the brink of bankruptcy, and it was really Iwata coming in and kind of saving the day. I mean, as a programmer, that's like saying, like, you know, to, you know, your programmer at work, hey, go run the company. And you're like, huh? I just program things. This guy was outside the box thinking, and he was a leader, a natural leader. That's what's so rad about Iwata. And he did things to try to really improve Nintendo's image. Look, I know it's controversial at the time when he's like, hey, we're not going to spend so much money at E3 and we're going to do more of these Nintendo Directs. But that was a way for them to speak directly to fans and key markets that Nintendo were looking for, as opposed to trying to do something as big as an E3.
You know what's astounding to me is that even the week before he passed, like the last thing we heard, I think for some people is really surprising, right? Because just the week before, he had a quote responding to investors. Like, that's insane. Like, he's just still on it. You know, and we don't know the details of his condition and how he was, like, you know, going out. But it just seems insane to me that just up until the very end, man, he's just like right there in it, at the very least, appeared to be still very invested and still very interested in like, not just, I don't know, it's like more than a company at that point, right? Like, it's
right. And it just goes to show what kind of guy he was, where nobody really knew exactly how sick he was. And he was working up until his unfortunate passing, and way too young and taken way too soon. I mean, this is a guy who could have done, and he's already done so much. I grieve for what could have been. And I know how much he's already done for the industry. But he was working up until, I mean, what it seems like right until the day he passed.
Yeah, man. So it just, games lost a great one, dude. It's insane. Like, everybody recognizes it. I think there's a really good post on, I believe it's Polygon, where it's just a lot of like great game makers and, you know, big execs at different companies saying farewell and just having like really nice quotes about Iwata's work and what he's done in the past. I recommend checking it out. We'll put it in the notes.
Yeah, it's rad too how like most of those people, I'm sure, had never even met the dude. You know, like people who don't have never met him or never talked to him, never any of this stuff, like have deep, deep heartfelt feelings about the man, just because, you know, well, I mean, part of it is Nintendo, because Nintendo is like everyone's heritage, regardless of if you were like a Genesis person or not. Like Nintendo is like where it all began, kind of thing. And you have this guy who is super personable, does awesome things on the Nintendo Rex, like not too serious. He's fully being silly, takes games to heart, does the Iwata ass stuff, and does like really intense dissections of like the development of games and the hardware and stuff, and things that you wouldn't normally get from them, because there's even passages of them like doubting themselves and doing like stuff, and that's not normal for Japanese companies. And then you have just like the man himself, just his face, you know, just like super, super cheery and awesome. And people love him. And
I think about this. I mean, right now we have Miyamoto and Jinyo Takeda. They're the guys who have to fill in for this guy right now. I mean, talking about big shoes. And look, we all love Miyamoto. Yeah. Miyamoto's, you know, one of our favorite guys on the planet. And I mean, Jinyo Takeda's, I mean, that guy's a legend. But it takes these two legends to really fill in for Iwata in his passing. That just kind of shows you the kind of guy he was.
For sure.
Well, I love too, like, the Nintendo put out like a translated copy of Genyo Takada's memorial address.
Man, talk about a tearjerker.
Yeah, it was really intense. And this is a dude that most people probably have never even heard of. In all honesty, like, Takeda, like, he's if you look at his resume, he's done really intense things, and he's been at Nintendo longer than anybody. He's by a couple years, he's the oldest employee there. Not oldest in age, but like longest standing Nintendo employee. And this guy's been involved in a million different things that are super pivotal, like the Wii and stuff like that. And even Miyamoto credits him as being Nintendo's first game programmer, putting out that crazy horse race arcade game and stuff. Like, this dude's been around and nobody knows him, but he's now the top dog. He's going to be over there with Miyamoto. I mean, they're sharing the title, but one of them is going to walk away with that title, I'm sure. And it might be this guy. Yeah.
You think it won't be someone else?
I think Takeda is the lock, I think, to run the company.
Yeah.
I mean, he's already done so much. I mean, senior, you know, management positions there. He's also, like Omar said, the longest serving Nintendo employee. So I think he's a lock.
Yeah, and the fact that him and Miyamoto are sharing the title right now is because Miyamoto is you could tell that he was very influential in everything that's been happening recently in Nintendo, and especially like game development. So these two guys are, one guy's hardware guy, one guy's software guy, and they're taking what Iwata started and they're going to push that forward as far as they can. But yeah, one of those two is probably going to end up as the next president, and I don't think it'll be Miyamoto.
Yeah, I could see that. I can also see it going a different way. I mean, who knows? There's a lot of talented people over there at that company, and who knows what's going to happen as they roll stuff out and kind of readjust for the loss.
But yeah, this guy, like, there'll be links in the show notes if people don't know who he is, and kind of explaining his roles and what he used to do, and a link to that eulogy, which is a really good read. And then there's a rad Iwata asks about the Wii that I mentioned before. And it has talking about like the things that they didn't want to participate in. And by that is like, you know, consumers want more and more of everything, like more power, more graphics, more this, more that. Like, you give them one thing and they want the next thing right away. And they were like taking drastic, purposeful steps in saying like, hey, we're not going to do this thing. We're going to give you something new and interesting that you're actually going to enjoy more than just the next step in graphical fidelity kind of thing. It's a really cool read.
Yeah, that speaks a lot about the Wii too. And you think about just like the way that it looks and the way that they design it and the things they were saying when they're making, like, we want it to be a piece of furniture in your house, basically, stuff like that. And just everything around that, it makes sense in line with that thinking. And I mean, that's kind of what we come to expect from Nintendo, and it hasn't been working out for them lately, but, you know, that's like, at the same time, we know, like, you can't ever count them out, really. Because eventually they'll have that Wii. They'll have that Super Nintendo.
Right, and who knows, the NX and all the deals that Iwata was working on with the DNA stuff. I mean, this could pan out to be something that could be huge for Nintendo. We still don't know. There's a lot of secrecy, and, you know, I think a lot of his legacy is going to live on for quite some time at Nintendo because of all the stuff that he's done these, you know, past, you know, 20, 30 years with the company. And I'm very excited to see what NX is. And I think that could be everything that we keep hearing, that this could be a game changer for Nintendo and it will change the way I still think it's going to be an extension of the Wii U somehow, where I think the Wii U is the beta for something close to a handheld that also is a home console.
You know, that seems likely. I mean, that
jives with a lot of the rumors that we've been hearing for years, even before they even, you know, before they said, yeah, we're working on this thing. Like when that DNA stuff happened, this was the rumors that the next Nintendo would be a handheld console hybrid thing.
Right. They even, you know, they combined their two different production houses, like the hardware dudes who were making stuff were in a different building than the mobile dudes. And then they combined that into like one building, I guess, was like a rumor that we've, or not a rumor, but a thing that had happened that we'd reported on in the past. So I think there's a lot of stuff that points to whatever it being, yeah, being some kind of, either some kind of hybrid or an extension of I'd almost say like an extension of the 3DS in some way.
I wonder if they'll call it Game Boy.
Yeah, does it bum you out? Like, do you think back when the DS was launched and everyone was still super skeptical because this thing, it looked weird. Right? Like the original DS looked weird. And it was coming out versus the PSP. I mean, they said there was the three pillars. You had the home console, you had the Game Boy, and then you had the DS. And when the DS took off and became like, you know, it sold like gangbusters and became the biggest thing ever, like the Game Boy died. Does that still... That bums me out, but I guess...
I think that there was still some... I think that maybe their intention was not to do that at first. I mean, obviously, they're going to slowly roll it out, but at that time, we had those Game Boy Advance SPs, man, and they were fantastic little devices, and some late-game stuff coming out of that era was like Golden Sun. I think there was a Golden Sun 2 at some point. Some Castlevania game, I think, came out fairly late. Metroid Fusion, like those are all like late Game Boy Advance games that kind of existed in the same time as the DS. I remember that time, and I remember thinking about the DS. Are you saying, like, you think that they'll set up that pillar structure more successful this time with something like the NX?
No, it does not that at all. It's just, it bums me out that, like, the DS and stuff isn't the Game Boy, because they intended to make this third pillar, the Game Boy line, continue on. But because because the DS did so well, that died away and this became the thing. But it, to me, they're the same thing. Like the DS was always the succession to the Game Boy. It's just because at the time the Game Boy was so, or the Advanced was so strong, they were scared to get rid of it. You know, like they were scared to take a full step into that DS camp when they should have just been like, hey, the next Game Boy is the DS, and whatever. I don't know. Yeah,
I think what happened to Omar was that I remember the three column strategy, and I think that was almost like they put that there as a safe thing.
Yeah, as a safe. It was a safety
in case the DS didn't do well. They could always go, well, we still got the Game Boy brand. They don't want to hurt the brand, right?
Yeah, that's the thing that I regret is that the Game Boy name went away. You know, it's not that the hardware isn't what I wanted it to be. It's that the Game Boy name kind of died.
I'm not too concerned. I think at some point, like you said, Omar, it's all kind of the same, and the DS is kind of the successor. It's kind of like semantics, you know. It's like, I don't know, I mean, it's called this, but I have like no real fond nostalgia for the Game Boy name itself.
Game Boy, dude. More Game Boy was like I grew up on the Game Boy. Like I had a Nintendo and a SNES, and I've had, except for the Wii U, I've had all of the Nintendo products. You know, like I've owned every single piece of.
Yeah, like, I mean, I guess you probably feel the same way about that name as I feel about like the Dolphin or the Revolution. Like some of the test names for the consoles are so good, and I get sad that they're not actually called that. It's, I don't know, maybe it's different.
It's just I grew up on Nintendo or on Game Boy. You know, like sitting at swim meets, playing a Game Boy when I was a little kid. I don't know. It feels like a little piece died when the Game Boy went away. But even though it is, I mean, I know in my head, like logically, like the DS is the next Game Boy. It's just, it's not called Game Boy anymore, and it's sad.
It is, and the DS went on to become one of the greatest, you know, selling consoles, handhelds of all time. It just kind of shows you more Iwata's vision and outside-the-box thinking. And like I said, he assumed that mantle of president and CEO at a very rough time for Nintendo, so... I'm going to miss the guy tremendously. Whether or not you're a Nintendo fan, if you are a fan of just video games, or not even video games, you're just fans of innovation and people thinking outside the box. And look, I think a lot of suits and corporate CEOs are terrible people. But with Iwata, I never saw that. I've never seen or heard anything negative about this guy, except for a guy that was just... a people's champion, someone who really, you know, fought for programmers and making the best type of games, and not not putting out a bunch of cookie cutter, you know, products. It would have been very easy for them to capitalize on previous successes and milk franchises. But they were smart. As much as there's certain things that Nintendo does that annoys the heck out of me, like I want a Metroid game every year, it's probably best that we don't have a Metroid game every year, because then we'll turn into Call of Duty, and we all know how that turned out. So I'm gonna miss Iwata, and I think Nintendo is in good hands with the current team, but I think Iwata's presence is going to be missed sorely in the future.
Yeah, I just hope that it doesn't. I hope there isn't some crazy shift, you know, because like, yeah, we complain about them taking missteps or whatever, but always. I don't know how to phrase this correctly, but like the innovation is always something you want, even though it's not something that you see at the time that is good, kind of thing. Like, I'm sure we'll look back and see the Wii U as some kind of like crazy revelation and blah, 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 blah. But like, I hope that whoever takes over the company, whoever does, doesn't just like turn them around and be like, hey, we're dumping this, we're going straight into mobile games. Like, I don't want some weird shareholder boardroom thing taking over a company that was pretty like strong in their stance so that we're going to do this the way we want to do this.
Yeah, I imagine how hard you have to fight. Like, I can't even fathom it. Like, how hard do you have to fight to, you know, to stand up for the name of, in the name of innovation, and convince people who are giving you money or investors like more money to say like, hey, this thing's going to work. We know our audience. We know we want to build this awesome thing. Like, I'm sure those boardroom discussions are pretty hectic.
I'm sure it's like a war zone, and especially right now, like, I can't imagine all the people just like scheming right now to get like
get their due, yeah.
So they can, you know, it's like a fucking regular election at like a, you know, like our president of the country. It's a bunch of backroom scheming to get some dude that you can, some puppet that you can put in the thing to do what you need. It's scary.
You know, I can only say that Balloon Fight was awesome when I was a kid, man. Like, that's just cool stuff. And whether you're a Pokemon fan or not, what this guy did for Nintendo with really making sure that Pokemon was done correctly. And here's a guy who worked on Gold and Silver and Pokemon Stadium for Nintendo 64.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just think about, I mean, HAL Laboratories is like, you know, seen as this, you know, what, the shining city on the hill. HAL's the company that gave us Smash Brothers. And he's the guy who really made HAL, you know, as successful as it was. There's so much good things we can say about Iwata. And I'll just say that, thank you, sir, for Balloon Fight. And thank you, because that's stuff that got me in the games, guys. I'm older than you. Everyone can make fun of me for liking Balloon Fight.
Dude, I played Balloon Fight all the time on my Game Boy. Like, I played that game. It's crazy, too. Like, that
still better than Call of Duty.
That story of him, even after he became president of Nintendo, like, there was some problem with the, was it the, some release of Smash Brothers, and he went and like actually sat down with the programmers and did like, spent a week or something just debugging the thing to get it out on time. Like, yeah, that's,
what president does that? Yeah, what president does crazy. That? Would you see Obama like going out to like, hey guys, we're having some problems with this war over here, and Obama's like, yeah, go hand me an M16. I'm gonna go out there and go with you guys.
I mean, it's like, it's like the president of the country sitting down like, hey, this town, you know, this town's mayor is messing up, so he's going to sit down and, like, fix this town kind of thing.
All right, let me put together the budget for the first quarter. That's not going to happen. Thanks, Obama. So with that, I think it's going to wrap up the show. There's no picks of the week this week. Our pick of the week is Iwata. That's how we're going to leave the show, guys.
Well, there's a bunch of really cool, like, things that are happening on the internet. People putting in really cool things. We mentioned some of them already, like, but some of my favorites, like if GameSpot, The Point is a series done by Danny O'Dwyer, and they did a really good one last week for Iwata, which is really rad. And Killscreen, which is a really like cool like indie mag for video game stuff, they had a really good write up and stuff. It was really, really touching.
If you're just looking for things that Iwata worked on, I think Pace Magazine probably has one of the better like lists of all the. The projects that Iwata put time into. There's a lot of cool stuff out there. Polygon has like a crazy amount of stories.
Yeah, the Polygon stuff is pretty cool. I think every game site out there has something. I mean, this guy was such a giant, and his passing is going to be, I think, felt for a very long time. So I think it's pretty easy to go out there And if you don't know anything about Iwata, look him up, because he was a giant and a titan in this industry.
And if you don't know anything about Takeda, you better look him up too, because he's coming.
He has a future.
Mm-hmm. And yep. If you don't know anything about Miyamoto,
what are you doing?
No idea what you're doing. Listen to the show.
And if you don't know anything about Indestructible Art, you can check us out on www.indestructibleart.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at Pixels to Panels, or you can write us an email at podcast@indestructibleart.com.
Hey, we know you got lots of podcasts to listen to, but you choose to listen to ours. Evan Campbell, what does that make you?
Indestructible.
We'll see you next week. And next week, we got a whole bunch of cool stuff. We're going to talk to Evan, who was at San Diego Comic-Con. He's going to tell us all about the fist fight he got into. Omar, me and Omar sat here. We did last week's episode. Evan was in San Diego. Evan got into a lot of trouble, and we will talk about that next week on episode 100. And is that 98?
That'd be 197.
I got to learn how to count. And the final countdown continues for our record-breaking episode 200. So. See you next week. Yeah, you don't really see comic book nerds do shit like that.
Yeah, I guess I never got swatted by a comic book nerd.
Comic book nerds don't go around swatting people.
Swatting people? What does that mean?
Like, you know, when somebody's on a Twitch stream and then as a practical joke, somebody calls in a SWAT team. They call in with the exact complaints or anonymous tip that would require a SWAT team to show up at your house. And then the SWAT team shows up and it's on Twitch. Like the live stream part. That's a thing that happens. You never heard of swatting, Omar?
Yeah.
No, Omar. That's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
No, people should be arrested.
Yeah, well, that's what happens.
It's an anonymous tip, Omar.
Your guys' brother.
It's not an anonymous tip. It's misuse of fucking department time or something.
It
totally is. But how do you track?
It's a lie.
How do you track the anonymous tip?
Because they're the fucking police, man. They know who where the call is coming from.
They should. Mm-hmm. They should know.
The call's coming from upstairs. Get out of the house now!